And for 2 years, I literally worked two jobs. I would work my 9 to 5 in corporate, mm-hmm. but every other time was maximized. I watched no TV. My commute to work was all about social media. My commute back was all about social media, building my following. And in the morning, I'd work on all my podcast stuff. I'd tell everybody what they need to do. These were volunteers, so everybody only worked like 1 hour a day.
Sure.
But like, yeah. I would like, do this, you do this, you do this. And I'd delegate everything everybody had to do. And then at night, I'd stay up till 12, 1 a.m. I got no sleep. I really worked two jobs for many years. I was like side hustling for real.
Welcome back to the show. I'm Travis Chappell, and I believe that if you can connect with the best, you can become the best. So after creating 800 podcast episodes about building your network, I've come to realize that networking is really just making friends, if you're doing it the right way anyway. Join me as I make friends with world-class athletes like Shaquille O'Neal, entertainers like Rob Dyrdek, authors like Dr. Nicole LaPera, former presidents like Vicente Fox, or even the occasional FBI hostage negotiator, billionaire real estate mogul, or polarizing political figure. So if you want to make more friends that help you become a better version of yourself, then subscribe to the show and keep on listening, because this is Travis Makes Friends. What's going on, everybody? Welcome back to another episode of the show. Today, I am making friends with Hala Taha. Hala, what's up?
Hi, Travis. So happy to be here.
Thanks for having me in your hometown city, right? New York?
Yeah.
Okay. And then I really want to jump into how you even got to doing what you're doing now, because I know that you kind of took more of a traditional path and ended up in kind of the corporate world. And then you were just kind of like, nah, screw this. And then somehow we're sitting here today in a random podcast studio in downtown New York City. So let's go back in time. Talk to me, let's say, 9-year-old Hala Taha. Where are you? What are you doing? Set the scene for us. Family life, all that stuff.
Okay, cool. So I grew up in a family of doctors.
Okay.
So my dad was a surgeon. My uncles were doctors. Everybody in my family was doctors. All my siblings are older than me, all became doctors.
How many?
Three.
Okay.
And all my cousins down the street, another three of them, all became doctors.
So
the only one in my immediate family that is not a doctor.
So you're a disappointment, basically.
I was the black sheep, but I was very different from everybody else from the start. I was very outgoing. I loved to sing, always like the star of every play, solo in every concert, very popular, just a really shining like child, right?
Not one to shy away from the spotlight.
Not one to. I was always really outgoing
seeking the sports team.
Yeah, I loved the spotlight.
What kind of sports?
Soccer. Okay. Did a lot of soccer primarily.
Okay, sweet.
And then 9/11 happened.
Mm-hmm. How old are you at the time?
I was just about to go into high school.
Okay.
And when 9/11 happened, it really changed everything. So my family, I'm Palestinian 100%.
Okay.
And before that, because my dad was really successful, like we were just treated like an Italian family in town, like really accepted. My mom was part of the PTA, all that kind of stuff. Once 9/11 happened, my family was treated totally differently. Mm. And I was treated totally differently. I wasn't allowed to participate in the talent show when previously I was a lead in all the plays and had the best voice in school.
Wow.
They wouldn't even let me in the talent show. I was very athletic, tried out for the cheerleading team, didn't make it. Fast forward to college, tried out for the cheerleading team and was co-captain. So it obviously wasn't that I sucked. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Even without any years of
practice.
Gets
more competitive in college.
Yeah.
Less competitive.
Without any years of like all that practice, I still was co-captain in college, right? So I just got zero opportunities in high school. And I remember my friend group changed. I was just friends with all a Russian girl and a Portuguese girl, like just like the only people that accepted me. Just everything changed. So in hindsight, it was really good for me because I was really used to rejection. And this mentality that I could do anything didn't go away because my dad grew up extremely poor in Palestine.
Okay.
8 people in one house, no electricity, no light. And he ended up becoming a doctor, getting a scholarship to becoming a doctor, coming to America, becoming a surgeon, then becoming chief of surgery, then opening up his own medical center. So I literally saw this man who grew up super poor and became very successful, took my whole family out of poverty. I had zero excuse. So even though I was rejected and all this stuff, I still believed that anything was possible, right?
Yeah.
So I came into college like guns blazing, right?
Where'd you go to school?
NJIT. Wasn't a great school because I had no extracurricular activities in high school. I got good grades, but there was nothing special about me because I literally did not get any opportunities in high school after 9/11. So by the time I went to college, the whole 9/11 thing cooled down. I went to a really diverse school, which was lucky. I didn't even mean it. But I all of a sudden was just treated normally. And then I was leading every play, you know, top of my sorority on the board, you know, co-captain of the cheerleading team, and really became the most popular girl in school, quite frankly. I was like very, very popular and loved it, right? And I just tried out for opportunities and was actually getting them. Then in my junior year of college, I was writing music. I was a really good singer. I was songwriting. My dream was actually to be a songwriter and a singer. I always knew that I was going to use my voice somehow in my career. And so I had this bright idea. I was in every single extracurricular activity you could imagine, because I was missing that from high school, that I did not go to class. I did not care about school. All I did was just like extracurricular things. I was part of every club, like everything, because I just was getting opportunities now. So I was in the radio club and I had this idea like, hey, let me just apply to radio station internships and push my music. That was the goal. Mm-hmm. So I applied. I got a job at Hot 97 and I ended up working for Ebro. If you know him, Hot 97 was like the number one hip hop and R&B station in the world.
Okay.
Ebro was the program director at the time. Now he's one of the personalities on the morning show. Mm. And so I was Ebro's intern. I did a really good job. Then they promoted me to be Angie Martinez's intern in the studio area, where only like 15 people were allowed. That's where all the celebrities would be every single day. And I was basically like the queen of all interns.
Nice.
Right. And I ended up dropping out of school because they just wanted me to work there basically full time, but for free. That's how you paid your dues in radio.
Yeah.
So I ended up working for free at Hot 97 for 3 years as Angie Martinez's assistant. So I would read commercials on air. That's when I first got like my chops wet in terms of being a personality.
So sorry to cut you off. Yeah. So 3 years you were intern there for 3 years. At what point did you drop out of school to where you were just like, you were doing that?
It was my junior of college. Okay. I was working at Hot 97 for about 6 months. And I remember Angie came up to me, she's Kala, can you come in every day?
Hmm.
And I was already failing out of school.
I was going to say, did she realize what she was asking of you?
Yeah.
Or she was just basically, hey, do this instead? Or
pretty much. Yeah. And the way that it works at Hot 97 is you work for free for 3 to 5 years and then they give you a show.
Hmm. Hmm.
That's how you pay your dues in radio. Yeah, and so I wanted to be the next Angie Martinez and they were basically priming me to be that.
Yeah.
And I knew that. And so I was like, screw it. I'm just going to drop out of school. I was lucky because my father was really successful. And I was making money at night at Hot 97, throwing underground hip hop showcases selling tickets and hosting concerts.
Always
and
going hustling
to,
something.
Yeah. Going to the clubs with the DJs and getting paid for that. And so I was just like hustling at night, working during the daytime. But back to like my family being very like regular immigrant family in terms of education is so important. Everybody was like really worried about me.
Not happy.
I was living with my brother.
Did you hide it?
No.
You told them
they
like,
knew it, but they were very upset. I was living on my brother's couch, basically, working at Hot 97. My brother lived in Brooklyn.
Your brother, who's also a doctor.
He was in residency or whatever. So it's like, I was just like totally loser to everyone. But I was learning a lot and I was doing all of Angie's research. And then on the side, I always took like my opportunity set B's, right? So like Jason Pfeiffer, you probably know him. He taught me about this concept, opportunity set A, opportunity set B. And something about me is that I always took, so opportunity set A is what you get paid for, what you're hired for. So at 187, that was like running the Dillette boards, audio editing, research, doing the commercials, answering the phones, running the contests. I would do that. That was my day job, right? But on the side, I was blogging for DJ Enough, learning how to do WordPress. I was doing social media for Angie Martinez. Mm. I was hosting online radio shows on the side with all the up and coming DJs, which was basically the precursor of podcasts. You would go into an actual physical studio. You'd be like, hey, guys, we're live from 2 to 3 at dtfradio.net or alistradio.net. Mm, and I literally had 4 or 5 shows with the up and coming DJs at the time. So I was really getting a lot of experience.
Yeah.
So 3 years into it, I dropped out of school, all these things. I really think I'm going to be the next Angie Martinez. I'm still not getting paid. Mm. I'm only making money at night and I'm getting a lot of pressure from my family. And a paid job opened up. They fired Angie Martinez's producer and I wanted to get that role. So I raised my hand. I emailed Ebro. I emailed Angie. I was like, listen, like I've been working here for free for 3 years. Would really just love to get like a minimum wage job. Can you hook it up?
I'm not asking for much here.
Yeah, like I didn't want like 100K salary. I was like, can I just be on the books? I'm like, I don't even know I have a key card. I don't even have a W-2 here. This is crazy. And they saw it as like a red flag because they're not allowed to have interns like that. And because I I basically just got fired.
That's wild.
For asking for a job.
Oh my gosh. After working there for three years for free?
Dropping out of school, everything.
Oh my gosh.
And so Angie cut my key card. What really happened is that they gave the job to one of my close friends, DJ Drewski, who's now on the radio. And I was just a young girl and I texted him. They wanted me to train him how to do the job.
Oh my gosh.
And so I texted him.
The job that you weren't qualified for.
And I was already doing.
Yeah.
They wanted me to train him how to do it. And so I texted him and I was like, hey, for free. So I texted him. They just wanted me to keep working for free, maybe for another 2 years. I don't know what the goal was. And maybe they knew that I wasn't a producer. I was a personality. So that was also another factor. But I was too young to think that all through. So I texted him and I was like, if you want to learn how to be the producer, learn it on your own. I don't feel good. I'm not going into work today.
Yeah.
And like, you never call out of work at Hot 97 because who knows? Jay-Z might be showing up that day. Beyonce might be showing up that day. And I just flaked on everyone. And Angie depends on me to do all her stuff. She just shows up to record. And I usually give her her whole thing.
Yeah, yeah.
She didn't have to do any work. I was doing all her work. So she saw that text. Drewski showed it to her like, hey, I'm sorry. Like, I'm not prepared. I don't know what to do. Holla's not coming. And she fired me. She cut my key card. This is the lady I babysat her kids. I went shopping for her. I did everything for her.
Jeez.
Cut my key cards. All my mentors, everybody, all the DJs were like my mentors, my friends. They all called me like, Holla, I'm so sorry. We're not allowed to talk to you
anymore.
Yeah,
yeah, exactly.
Like, you're blackballed.
Yeah, fuck that corporate
stuff. Yeah, they blackballed me from the industry. So I was, like, so devastated. I felt like somebody died. Hot 97 was my identity. I was big on Twitter. My screen name was Holla Hot 97. Everybody at college was like, oh, Holla's the girl that, like, went to Hot 97. I was, like, had the coolest job.
Yeah.
I was dating Chris Brown at one point. Like, I was, like, hanging out with all these celebrities. Like,
how was that not the first thing that you brought up?
But you know what I'm saying? I was just like this little star at like 20 years old. You know what I mean? And then it all came crashing down and I basically had to think of a new way to build it up. And I did.
Well, Holla, how dare you ask for money for work? You know what I mean? How dare you? So audacious.
I know.
So what did family say at this point?
So at this point, I still wanted to follow my dreams. I really believed that I was going to be like a personality and in entertainment. And my dad was really the only one in my corner. If it wasn't for my dad, none of this would have happened.
Thanks,
so he was just like, just keep doing what you want to do.
Good
keep following your dreams. And I was just working side jobs. I would work for like a festival company and do their social. And so I was making little money here and there, but I kept following my dreams.
So you're how old at this point?
22.
Okay.
23.
Okay. And this was, at what stage were podcasts at this time?
Podcasts existed, but very hard to get into.
Okay.
I actually technically was on a podcast that was like an online radio show and they also put it on Apple. So I was technically on a podcast already.
Got it.
But it was like nobody really knew how to subscribe. Nobody really knew.
This was like 2010.
Exactly.
Okay.
Exactly. This was like 2010. Then I decided I had this idea. I got fired on a Thursday. By Sunday, I had this new idea. I was going to start something called Strawberry Blunt. I was into smoking weed at the time.
Just at the time.
I smoke once in a while. Now I'm more of a like, squeaky clean reputation. So that's whatever. It's okay. Weed's legal in most places now.
Yes.
But at the time, it wasn't. And I called it.
Fair point.
Yeah, it
fair
wasn't.
Point.
So it was like really cool to be called Strawberry Blunt, you know? And so then we were the sorority of hip hop. And I decided I was going to recruit girls from all these different companies like Def Jam and iHeart and VH1. Girls who weren't getting opportunities. Young girls, pretty girls, and we were going to band up. And you had a blog already because I had ran DJ Nuff's blog. I had worked on Funkmaster Flex's blog, taught myself how to build WordPress websites. And in 2 weeks, I recruited 14 girls. I found them on Twitter and Craigslist. And I was like, submit your pictures, submit your bio. I'll teach you how to write. I'll teach you how to blog. And I just wanted like pretty girls in the industry.
Back when people on Craigslist were actually kind of trustworthy.
Exactly. But it's so funny that so many of these girls I met on Craigslist is like so random.
Yeah.
And so I built this sorority. I went back to school.
Okay.
And I remember my first board meeting was at Mice College. Then I like rented out a room and I had 14 girls and I was the president of the sorority of hip hop. And I went back to school. And at this point, I was so much smarter than I was. Hot 97 taught me discipline. So
then
I started getting like straight A's. I was like, you know, academically like rocking it. And started this blog. 3 months later, I basically figured out how to hack Twitter. I was the first blog that would at mention people in the titles and like automate, you know, when you send out a blog on Twitter and it will be like, if they're like mentioning a celebrity or a politician, they'll at mention it, the blog title, and then the URL to the blog. Mm-hmm. I was like the first one to figure that out. Mm-hmm. And I had, you know, in and out of this organization, I had 50 girls at a time, 150 girls in and out over 3 years, blogging for free for me. So 50 pretty girls tweeting Drake with the URL of our blog, Drake's going to retweet one of us.
Yeah.
So that's what happened. We were getting retweets by all these celebrities. 3 months in, we were one of the most popular hip hop and R&B sites. And all of a sudden, I got really popular. Then all the DJs, because they knew who I was, they were like asking me to host all their parties. So I would host all of DJ Camilla's parties and Funkmaster Flex parties. And then this blog became sort of an event company, and I'd host concerts and parties, and we started getting paid that way. MTV noticed us. They shot a small pilot. Didn't go anywhere, but this was literally 3 months in. I was like, who cares? Yeah. What's going to happen next? 2 years later, MTV approaches me right after Jersey Shore ended. And they were like, Holly, we're going to give you your own show. We signed all this paperwork. We went to the office. And they like touted us around. They filmed us all summer. And basically, we shot a show. And they got us a studio on Broadway. They must have invested like $200,000 at least on this pilot. We had a concert. We did a dance. They filmed me at my parents' house with my boyfriend and restaurants, all this kind of stuff. So, and they did my hair and makeup. And I finally felt like I made it, right? Yeah. I was getting paid per episode. I was the lead of the show. It was literally at the height of MTV after Jersey Shore. And I was like, I'm literally going to be so famous. And I was so excited. My family was totally against it. But
really?
I just, yeah, they really weren't happy about the reality
How
show.
Come?
They just were worried that they were going to position me like Snooki or something. Like I was a wild girl. I was really smart and like blogging and stuff, but sure. I was a partier and all this stuff. So they were just worried that they were going to position me as like Snooki. And they were trying to make us, like, we were a sorority, you know, so they were trying to make us fight, and like we had like bathroom fights and all this stuff.
It still has to be interesting for television.
Exactly.
Right?
Yeah. So it's like we had like bathroom fights and all this stuff. But 2 weeks before it was supposed to air, my producer calls me from MTV, Tiffany Williams. I'll never forget her name. And she's, I'm so sorry, Hala, but we're not going to air the show and we're going in a different direction.
Oof.
And apparently they always shoot two shows and then they pick one. So they didn't pick us. And I was like crushed. And at this point, I was like 6 years into like working odd jobs, trying to make this all work. You know what I'm saying? Everybody in my family is like already doctors. And like, I'm just really behind everyone. And I was like, okay, I guess this is it. I guess this is over for me. I'm going to be normal. Let me go get my MBA. Honestly, everybody wanted me to be like, they thought all I could be was like a speech language pathologist, or nothing wrong with that. But all my siblings were like, be a physical therapist, be an occupational therapist, or a speech pathologist. I applied to 14 speech pathology schools, rejected from all 14. And thank God, because if that would have been my job, I would have been so, that is
something
so
tells me you wouldn't have
me.
Stuck with it. Yeah.
And something I think they were like, what is this girl wants to be? She's going to get bored or something. I got rejected from every school.
Wait, did you finish school then the second time you went back?
I did. I finished my undergrad and I did like really good my senior year, but my GPA overall was really bad. It was like a 2.3.
Yeah, yeah.
I just, my first
Phoning
3 years,
first
like,
years.
Yeah, it was just terrible. And so it was really hard for me to get into grad school. And I ended up reaching back out to my director of alumni studies at NJIT and basically like emailing her nonstop. Finally, she took a cup of coffee with me. I told her my whole story and she said, I'll let you into the MBA program if you promise that you get a 4.0 and I'm kicking you out if you don't.
You know, what's wild to me is that it was so difficult for you to get into another program like that when you were likely, of all of the people applying, the only person that actually had experience building a business or like selling shit to people or marketing or any of the actual skills that you need to build a business. Like you were the only one, but you got somewhat bad grades at this thing. So we can't let you study here. That's the thing. There's so many issues that I have with the corporate world and the education world that just like they put up these random barriers to entry that make no fucking sense at all. And then they enforce them as if it's, you know, the law. You know what I mean? It's so weird to me.
And I'm really lucky because I really did not deserve to get into that program, but they let me in and I crushed it. I graduated number one.
Through
I got
a relationship.
4.0. through a relationship that I basically begged, and they were like, all right, we'll give you a shot. They saw that my last year I did well. And then I just got straight A's. I was like a star in the program.
This is for your MBA?
My MBA.
Okay.
So my MBA gave me the opportunity to transition into corporate, because at this point I thought I'd never get back on a mic. Again, this, I already had 4 or 5 shows. Like, I really wanted to be an on-air personality, but I was just like, forget it. I just need to be normal, get a job, make my parents happy.
So this is your kind of like, I'm selling out moment a little bit, yeah, where you're just like, I'm giving up on this silly thing and I'm doing this thing.
Oh, and by the way, I shut down the website. There was 100 girls that hated my guts.
Mm.
All my best friends hated my guts now.
Because you shut down the thing that was their livelihood, kind of?
And we weren't making that much. It was like so much fun. It was their identity. It was like our community.
Yeah.
But I was like, I can't do this anymore. I need to work on myself.
You got
to
be an adult.
Exactly. So I got my MBA.
You're mid-20s now?
Like late 20s, like 27, 28. Okay. So I got my MBA. That was my door into corporate. Because without that, my resume looked crazy. Free intern at Hot 97. I had sorority of hip-hop, strawberry blunt. Like, they're...
Almost MTV show.
Oh, yeah. So it's, everyone's, what is wrong with this girl? So I applied for corporate and I got a job at Hewlett-Packard as an MBA intern. And the only reason why I got it is because I was getting my MBA. And so it was like a full-time job. I was making $70,000 a year for as an intern. And for me at the time, I was like, this is,
well, that's $70,000 more than your last intern.
Yeah. So I was like, oh my God, I'm fucking loaded. So I loved that job. And I was going to school at the same time. And it was basically 30 hours a week. It was basically full-time. And I was crushing it in school, crushing it. I became the face of the young employees at Hewlett-Packard.
Hmm.
I was an intrapreneur within the organization. And I was so tech savvy. I thought at 27, I was going to be so behind because all my other friends started their corporate jobs at 22.
Sure.
I was actually like jumping over people in corporate because I knew how to graphic design, video edit.
Yeah.
I knew how to build websites.
You had real skills.
I knew SEO. Yeah. I was like just the most digitally savvy on the team. And so I got promoted like 4 times in 5 years. Like, I stayed at the company for 5 years and just, I was like president of the Young Employee Network. Then I was in the Global Young Employee Network, which is like an employee organization within them. And I was doing the same kind of stuff. Instead of interviewing like people on a radio show, I was interviewing the CEO at the town hall. And I was in the conferences doing like the tours and on the mic. So I was doing the same. I was still Hala.
Sure.
But in the corporate world, right? And 4 years into it, about 6 months before, I stayed there for 4.5 years, let's say, I realized that I had to get back into podcasting.
Hmm.
I wanted to just get back into it. And I had this idea of starting a podcast. I was going to call it Young and Profiting. I was part of the Young Employee Network. So I think that's where I got like the name from.
Hmm.
And my goal was to, I was leading like 7,000 young people at HP. And I was like, why don't I lead 7 million people? And it doesn't have to be HP, right?
Hmm.
And so I decided that I was going to start my personal brand on LinkedIn, because I felt like a lot of the people that would want to listen to my show would be on LinkedIn.
Okay.
And I decided to start this podcast. And now I had a lot of experience with this kind of stuff.
Sure.
So my podcast was like really good from the start.
Yeah.
And I spent a lot of time on my first like 3 episodes, 5 months on them. So like I kind of came out with a bang.
Yeah.
I became an influencer on LinkedIn quite fast. Disney streaming services recruited me at the same time. So I moved to New York, started working at Disney. And
you moved to New York from?
Jersey.
From Jersey, okay.
And by the time I got a job at Disney, I was like a top 10 how-to podcast on Apple. My podcast
What year was this that you started the show and started doing LinkedIn stuff?
2018 was when I started Young and Profiting Podcast.
Okay, got it.
Okay. So I started Young and Profiting Podcast in 2018. By episode 2, I had my first volunteer who's now my business partner, Timothy Tan.
Okay.
And I had all these fans on LinkedIn because I was the number one podcaster on LinkedIn. All these fans on LinkedIn would reach out to me and they'd be like, Hala, I want to help your show. Your show changed my life. How can I help? How can I help? And I would get all these people asking, how can I help? So I opened up a Slack channel and I started training all these people how to help me on my show. So I had one guy from Atlanta who'd help me with videos. I had one guy in Estonia helping me build my website.
Hmm.
I had a guy from California helping me with guest outreach. And a lot of these people are still on my team. By episode 8, I had 10 people in a Slack channel. In 2 years, I had about 20 people all around the world that were helping me with my podcast for free.
Wow.
so that I could do my job full time. I was scared of being an entrepreneur.
Sure. Yeah.
And I had now, I was like an executive at Disney, like crushing it.
Yeah.
I didn't really want to leave the corporate world. I didn't even think, I thought that podcasting was just a hobby, right?
Sure.
So I had a volunteer team of about 20 people working for free.
That's fantastic. I'm eating it up because I like the storyline. So,
yeah.
So you have 20 people working for free for you, but you're still at the point where you're buying into the idea that the corporate world is the better path forward, even though you have a ton of social proof that would suggest that if you took the leap, you would probably do pretty well.
Yeah.
So what tipped the scales eventually?
So it was the way that I first monetized everything. So okay. 2 years into it, my podcast is pretty notable. I've had big guests from the start. It was really quality show.
Just to pause real quick. 2 years into it.
2 years into
2 years,
it.
2 years, people. I have this conversation with so many people. Yeah, because exactly what you're like, obviously we both kind of have helped a fair amount of people start podcasts. And the question is always, well, how do you get your show to be successful? And more lately, I've done a lot more thinking around what's like the base level of work that you have to do in order to get to a point where you feel like you actually kind of know what you're doing. You already started like a year, 2 years, maybe even 3 years, 4 years of experience beyond what most podcasters start at with your previous experience doing hosting, being in radio, doing parties and events and emceeing and all the other things that you did. And then you started a podcast and had 20 people on your team and did it for 2 years. And then that's when you
Exactly.
I just want to paint that picture for people because I think that's something that most people would have just glazed over. But that's a very important detail of this entire thing is everything you built today stems from the fact that you're always willing to put in the work, grab the experience and the skills that are necessary for that thing, and then take massive action and stay disciplined and consistent until you see the result. That's what it takes. Sorry, go ahead.
No, it's such a great point. And for 2 years, I literally worked two jobs. I would work my 9-to-5 in corporate, mm-hmm. but every other time was maximized. I watched no TV. My commute to work was all about social media. My commute back was all about social media, building my following.
Mm-hmm.
And at night and in the morning, I'd work on all my podcast stuff. I'd tell everybody what they need to do. These were volunteers. So everybody only worked like 1 hour a day.
Sure.
But like, I would like, do this, you do this, you do this, you do this. And I'd delegate everything everybody had to do. And then at night, my boyfriend at the time was a music producer. He worked nights. We'd eat dinner and then he'd go to work and I'd stay up till 12, 1 a.m. I got no sleep, right? But I really worked two jobs for many years, but definitely for the 2 years that I was like side hustling for real. Then COVID hit.
Mm.
And me and my boyfriend moved to Montauk, which is upstate New York. Mm-hmm. Also, my dad ended up passing away from COVID.
Oh, no.
And for 3 months, in March, it happened right away. My family was one of the first to be impacted. I moved home to take care of my parents who had COVID. I ended up getting COVID. And so at that point, COVID was so scary that like I didn't see my boyfriend for 2 months. I didn't see my friends for months. I was really bored. And I was already working from home from Disney. And I remember I had Heather Monahan on my show. Do you know her?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So she's like a LinkedIn influencer, a big podcaster, and she was obsessed with my marketing on LinkedIn.
Okay.
And she was obsessed with my videos. So she kept commenting on my stuff. Paula, can you do this for me? I really want you to do my social media. And I told her like, hey, Heather, I have a volunteer team. I have a great career at Disney. I can't help you, but I'll show you how to do it. So I would try to train her on the weekends because I wanted her as my mentor. So I was just trying to be nice.
Yeah, of course.
And she literally... I showed her my Slack channel. I showed her my drive, my templates. I tried to teach her how to do everything. And she's like, Paula, I have a budget that I was going to give to VaynerMedia. I see your stuff. Your stuff is better. You literally have a marketing agency and you don't know it. I will be your first client. Trust me. Let's do this. And I'm stuck in my parents' house. My dad is dying. I'm like, I remember, you know, I'm like thinking, how can I take things to the next level? Life is so short. Then I'm also have no commute. So I've got like all this time unlocked because it used to take me a couple hours every day to go back and forth to Disney in New York.
Yeah.
And I was just like, all right, let me do this. I've got this volunteer team. So Heather started paying some of my employees, hiring more people from my creative team in the Philippines and stuff like this. And then my second client, Jason Waller, at the time, he was the CEO of a billion-dollar company, Power Home Solar. It was the fastest-growing public company in the world. He had a lot of money. He invited me on his podcast. And at the end of his show, he looked me straight in the eye and he was like, Hala, can you do my social and podcast production? And now I had my first client and I was like, yes, I can. Right.
Mm-hmm.
And so I had no website. I had nothing to my name, nothing.
Wait, you didn't have business cards?
No business cards, no logo, no website. I didn't even have a company name. I just said, yes, I can.
Yeah.
And then I remember me and my business partner, Timothy Tan, who started with me episode two, I knew how to graphic design. So I created a really cool PowerPoint presentation.
Yeah.
I listed he wanted LinkedIn, Instagram, and podcast services. And I listed it at 3K, 3K, 3K. And then Tim was like, he's a billionaire, Hala. Why don't we just do 10K each service?
That's a fair question.
And I was like, okay, let's try it. I was like, worst he can do is negotiate us down. So we hop on a call. I do a great presentation. And then I, at the end, I'm like, here's the price. It's 30K a month. And he's, let's do it. And I was like, all right.
Yeah. And here's a big lesson here, people. Big lesson. This is something I've been thinking about, again, a lot lately. And it was Alex Ramosi who said it recently. He's just really good at simplifying, you know, complex things. But he said, solve rich people problems, they pay better. And it was one of those, it was one of those things where you, exactly what you're talking about. Like you look at the services that you offered. The services could be delivered from $2 VAs in the Philippines and could be sold to somebody who is, maybe has a podcast on the side and they make $40,000 a year and they would pay $900 a month for that service. Or you go to somebody who makes $1 billion a year in revenue at their business, who needs that thing to solve a much greater problem, which is status, influence, attracting great employees and better people in the organization. And like those types of problems to them are worth sometimes millions or tens of millions of dollars. So it's like you first hear it, it kind of sounds, oh, well, you know, you just said that there was going to be that versus that. Well, what makes it worth that? The only thing that makes it worth that is the value that that person is receiving from the agreement.
Yeah.
Right? Because this $40,000, not to talk shit on anybody making $40,000 a year, I'm just saying if you solve a $40,000 a year person's problem, then you get paid the $500 that it is, because the value to them is basically, hey, I don't have to take my time to edit my podcast anymore. That to me is worth $500 a month.
Yeah.
But this guy's like, oh, you can help me increase my influence. You can help me get a better social following. You can help me grow my audience. You can help, like, these things will be worth millions of dollars to me. Therefore, I'm okay with letting go of a couple six figures every year.
Yeah. And the other thing is that I had the social proof. I had already blown myself up on LinkedIn. I had already blown up my podcast. I was getting the guests. And not for nothing, I had originally, my original price was definitely underpriced given all the expertise I could bring.
I agree.
And Jason was like my only first client. So I literally took him from a nobody to him blowing up on Instagram, blowing up on LinkedIn. He became like a top podcast.
Yep.
I made him all that money back
because
I got him all these sponsorships and things. So I crushed it for him.
Yep.
So it's like he believes like money well spent.
Yeah, no, that's what I'm saying. That's what I'm saying. It's like it's just an appropriation of the value received from the other party.
Yeah.
It's like, what do they view this work as being worth to them?
And since he paid me so much money, I was really able to get the resources that I needed and everything like that to really get it under control. But I do view Jason as like he was my seed investor.
Yeah.
Because without that first influx of money, I then had my first U.S. hire. I was able to actually pay my team, volunteers.
So what's awesome about those types of like seed investments is that it's a customer.
Exactly.
You know, that's the one thing about raising capital, especially for a service-based business like that. It's just if you're going to do it, the best way to get somebody to vote is with their wallet.
Yeah.
Because almost nobody in your life is going to be like, Hala, that's a shitty business idea. You know what I mean? If you explain to them, here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to do production. I'm going to do LinkedIn. I'm going to do all these other things. And so nobody in your life is going to be like, that's a bad idea. You shouldn't do that.
Yeah.
Everybody's going to be like, oh, that sounds cool. And then you're going to get all this kind of this confidence and this hope. They're like, I'm going to go do it. And then you go talk to the people that told you it was a good idea. And they're like, oh, not right now. Not right now. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But if you go get somebody who has money and they actually sign and they actually pay you money to do the thing, that is a big vote that you're doing something that people probably need. You're solving a problem for somebody.
And you don't need to take investments from anyone. You can just bootstrap your company if you just can get clients and make sales from the start. Too many entrepreneurs, I think, don't know how to sell or get clients. That's something that I was good at from the start. Like I was getting big clients from the start. So then I got Jason Waller. Then I got Kara Golden, the CEO of Hint Water.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, okay.
And I did all her social media. Then I got Hint's marketing, and I did all Hint marketing.
Great.
Then I got the CEO of 1-800-GOT-JUNK, and I took over his profile and 1-800-GOT-JUNK. So I was crushing it. 6 months in, I was making nearly $200,000 a month in nice. My business, still working at Disney from home.
Yeah.
Still doing it as a side hustle.
Still in the middle of COVID.
Still in the middle
right?
of
this
COVID. Now I was in, yeah, my dad had passed away. I was living in Montauk, and I would, you know, a lot of my team was overseas in the Philippines, and I didn't have a creative director or anything at the time. So I would go to work. Then at 9 p.m., I'd start my job with my team in the Philippines, telling them all the social stuff I needed to do. And that's what I did for 6 months. 6 months into it, I'm working at Disney. I'm dying to become an entrepreneur. I'm ready to take the leap. I feel like this is not a fluke. I have so many clients. I'm doing so well. My boyfriend at the time was super against it. He thought I was making the worst decision. We ended up breaking up and I moved out.
I was going to say, I noticed you said at the time. So.
Yeah. So we were 11 years into our relationship.
Oh, wow.
We were together for a long time.
That's a real boyfriend then.
He was like basically my husband. And he was so mean to me about starting this company. Hated that I was an entrepreneur. And he's an entrepreneur. So I thought that was really messed up.
Wait, why?
He just hated the attention, like that I was so busy. He thought that I was like that it was a fluke. He was so proud of my Disney job because it was a great job. So he was really proud of me working at Disney.
Such a weird thing, though, right? I mean, like, because the business was
doing so well. Yeah. And he was saying really, and we're friends again now, but he was really hurtful to me. He would tell me my business is fake. My employees are fake because a lot of them were in the Philippines. You've got a fake business, fake employees. And he was really, really belittling. And so I had to get out. So I left the house, moved out, packed up all my stuff, went to my mom's house, and ended up relaunching my podcast in her basement. It's not because I was broke. I was doing really well, but I just needed like somebody who loved me, right? And so I moved back to my mom's house. And I quit my job at Disney because I found out I was going to get on the cover of Podcast Magazine. Then I found out that Matthew McConaughey was coming on my show. And I was like, already had 100, maybe 60,000 followers on LinkedIn. I was already like a LinkedIn influencer. And I was making money where I could invest back in my podcast. So my podcast blew up because I figured out media buying. And I was like, okay, I'm going to quit. So 6 months into it, 30 paid employees around the world, cover of Podcast Magazine, about to interview Matthew McConaughey. This was 2021, January 2021, February 2021-ish.
Okay.
Quit my job, became a full-time entrepreneur. And now the rest is history, you know? Everything has just totally blown up. The new thing that I started a year and a half ago is my podcast network. So I really figured out how to monetize my show, the show like Jason Waller's show that I blew up. I figured out how to get him sponsorships. And then I started a podcast network. And now I'm running about 25 top business shows where I'm growing and monetizing them, trying to recruit you to come to my podcast network. And then I still have, the number one LinkedIn marketing agency. So that's the other thing we're known for.
So many awesome things here, Hala. I don't want to bring the mood down. So you tell me if you want to go here or not, okay?
We can.
But I want to talk a little bit about your dad.
Yeah.
Because it sounds like he was a tremendous influence on you and someone who I feel like, especially as entrepreneurs, when we're just kind of like crazy people who just come up with random ideas and do them, even though it's totally against the common like knowledge, like collective knowledge, especially when you come from a family like that. So I feel like a lot of times we just want somebody to believe in us, you know, and it sounds like your dad was that person inside of your family. Would that be correct to characterize it that way?
Oh, 100%. Okay. Like my dad would always tell me, I would always get really insecure and be like, but everyone's a doctor, but you're going to be the boss of all of them. Don't worry. You know what I mean? Like, you're going to be a star. So he would always put it in my ear. Just keep going, keep trying. And what makes me feel so sad is that all my success really happened right after he died.
Yeah.
Literally, 2020 was literally the worst year of my life and then became the best year.
Yeah.
It's like my podcast blew up as soon as he died. It's just, even my business started while he was in the hospital. So he didn't even know I had a business, nothing. He knew that my podcast he was proud of my podcast. But at that time, I was just like corporate with a small podcast, nothing serious. But it's crazy to think that he may know, but you know.
Yeah. Was the experience for you just kind of like out of body? Because there's so many weird factors to consider at that time. Like not going into an office, like being in a cramped house with only your boyfriend, and then COVID and all the weirdness that came along with that, and then your dad passing during that time, starting up. There's six or seven, I mean, really life-changing things that are happening at one time. Even if they happened individually, they would have been like life-altering, you know what I mean? But this is all kind of converging at this one moment in time.
Yeah.
Do you like have memories of that time, or was it just like
it's just like such a blur. Like it was so many life-changing things. On top of all that, for some reason, as soon as I started my business, I had three childhood best friends that grew up with me. They just turned their backs on me. So I broke up with basically my husband. My three best friends basically were like, F you, Hala. You want to choose this life? Do it on your own. So I lost my best friends. I lost my husband. I changed my job. I became an entrepreneur. My dad died. It was just like the worst 6 months. But then at the same time, my career was like this.
Yeah.
You know?
Did you always have a strong sense of confidence?
Very.
Okay. Do you think that came from like an innate belief in yourself, or did that come from like parents instilling that, a dad believing in you? Where did that come from?
I would say that I was confident. 9/11 killed that confidence a little bit. Mm. When I was 19 years old, I became obsessed with the law of attraction.
Mm. Like, okay, The Secret, all that stuff.
Felt so deep into it. Mm. I was obsessed with these. Have you ever heard of Abraham and Esther Hicks?
Yes, I've heard of Esther Hicks. I don't know.
Yeah,
about Abraham.
So that's her husband. Okay. And so I would read all their books, and I was like obsessed with all of their like CDs. I would listen to it on repeat. And so I brainwashed myself at 19 years old, right before Hot 97. And I would like say affirmations every morning. You're the most beautiful girl in the world. You're so smart. You're going to be famous. You're going to. And I would like just brainwash myself. So 19 years old, I was like untouchable, crushing it at Hot 97, crushing it at my blog, like running all the events, hosting all the hottest parties, hanging out with celebrities, like literally like almost got signed to Young Money, almost got a show on Love and Hip Hop, almost got a show on Sirius XM. Like the amount of opportunities that I was like, even if I didn't get all of them, I was getting opportunity after opportunity after opportunity. Really, when I lost that, when MTV like pulled the plug on the show, that was sort of like the last straw mentally that I was like, oh, this whole like manifestation thing is not real. I need to just be like, be serious now, right? Then, you know, I started my podcast, thank God. I think it was just boredom, honestly, because I just needed that outlet. That's who I am inside, you know? And it just happened.
Can't deny it.
I couldn't deny it, you know? It just happened again. And 4 years later, right? So I was building that and it was really cool. But it was COVID and my dad dying that really instilled me like, life is limitless. Look at what my dad did. He came from war and like the worst part of the world and pulled himself out of nothing. What's my excuse? Let me just give it a shot. What's the worst that can happen, right?
It's not like the worst that can happen.
I can't go. It's not like I could not, like if it fails, I'll just go back to corporate.
Like, yeah, right.
What's the big deal, you know? And so I just took it hard to have such clear sight for myself and belief in myself. And still everyone around, because my dad was gone now. Mm-hmm. My mom didn't want me to quit my job. My boyfriend didn't want me to quit my job. Everyone was against it. Mm-hmm. And so here I was again, black sheep, but so successful. And I was like, you know what? Screw everyone. I'm going to show them, you know?
Yeah, right.
And I did.
What do you view now about the law of attraction and manifestation and all that stuff? How do you view that now?
I definitely believe that you have to believe that things are possible.
Yeah.
You have to have a positive outlook on things. And you have to believe that you are what you want to be, right? That you already are. But the other thing that I think a lot of people miss is you have to be willing to put in the daily action.
Action.
I put in so much action.
Yeah.
Right? So it didn't happen by accident. And it's also like the skills. The reason why I was successful at podcasting pretty quickly, you know, I've only been doing it for 5.5 years. I'm number one on the entrepreneurship charts today.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? I'm competing with people who did it 10 years before me and I'm at their level, you know? Even though it's been 5 years, I grew fast, you know? But it's because I started with such a strong foundation of skills. I had audio editing skills, marketing skills, video design, like graphic design. I don't do those jobs anymore.
Yeah.
But I was able to delegate and teach and build and learn how to motivate teams and all that kind of stuff. And I figured out how to make money to then invest in my show, invest in my brand, invest in my future. So it was a lot of hard work and sacrifice. I sacrificed relationships. I sacrificed time. Yeah. I worked through every weekend for 4 or 5 years. Yeah. Like, I busted my ass, but I also believed in myself. If I busted my ass and didn't believe it was possible, I wouldn't have amounted anywhere.
Well, you wouldn't have busted your ass.
Exactly.
Yeah, right. Yeah, you have to believe it's possible, but you also have to
do the hard work.
I was talking to, I think you had her on your show, maybe not yet, Jen Gottlieb.
Oh, yeah, she's coming, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. But I just had her on to talk about her new book. And I liked when she said, I asked her a similar question because she, honestly, a lot of similarities. Like,
really?
She was like singing and was trying to be on Broadway and all this other stuff. But anyway, I asked her about the law of attraction and she said, I only believe in the law of attraction when it's followed by the law of action.
Mm.
And I was like, yes, thank you for saying that because, yeah, there's so much manifestation bullshit that's out there that keeps people in this constant state of believing they're awesome without any proof to back it up.
Exactly. You need the experience, the proof, the hard work, the failures.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right? The mistakes that then add up to give you some sort of foundation to actually be what you want to be, right?
Yes.
So it's like you got to do the thing. And the other thing is that you're not always going to get every opportunity.
Yeah, right.
But it's all about the at-bats.
Yes.
It's all about getting the opportunities, but you're not going to get them all. That's the other thing that people don't understand is I got rejected over and over and over again.
Part of
but
it.
But then one thing hit and now I'm like the podcast princess. You know what I mean? But
exactly.
It took so many rejections to get here.
Yeah. You also will not be able to capitalize on every opportunity.
Yeah.
Because taking the opportunity is just a rep of like how to execute on opportunities. You know what I'm saying? Like you got a bunch of opportunities when you were younger, but like they didn't pan out because maybe you weren't ready for them to capitalize
yet.
And it's just, there's so many people that stop doing that. If you stop getting up to the plate, you're not going to hit a home run. And the odds of you hitting a home run on the first at bat are so low because you never swung a bat before. You know what I mean? You got to get up to the plate again, swing the bat again. You strike out, you go sit down. You come back, you stem back up there, you get in the box and you take a few more swings. You know what I mean? Like that's the thing about luck, that the conversation about luck that I have with people, because they're like, oh, do you believe luck exists? Look, luck for sure plays a role in success, especially outside success. I believe that luck is a part of all of that. But the luckiest people are the ones that have the most at-bats.
Yeah.
Because eventually, like sooner or later, maybe you hit a single the first time. You know what I mean? Maybe your second hit, it's a double. You know what I mean? But like on your 845th time up to bat, you're going to smack a home run, you know, because you kept getting up. You kept getting up and you kept taking swings at the freaking ball. But so many people just, they get up, they take their three swings, they strike out and they go sit on the bench and they never get up again because that was painful. You know, that sucked to strike out. Everybody saw me. All my friends and family, it was embarrassing to strike out in front of everybody.
Yeah.
So what's your option then? What are you going to do? Just quit everything forever because it sucks to not be good at it? In 100 years from now, nobody's going to remember that we're having this conversation. Nobody's going to remember the things that like 200 years from now, we're going to be irrelevant.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, why are you so focused on what all these people are thinking about you when 90% of them don't actually care about you as a human being? Like maybe 95% of them don't care about you as a human being. Like they're only caring about what you do because they're trying to measure up what they do against what you do. So they hope you don't do well because that would make them feel worse about themselves because they're not taking the action that they know they need to take.
Exactly.
And you're going to let their opinion define whether or not you go do the thing that you want to do with your life.
I remember my friends who are like, we're not friends anymore. When I started my podcast, they were like, you're too old to start a podcast. They were like, why are you doing this? You're only doing this because you're not married. Or they're like, put me down so bad. And then I feel like they were so embarrassed of them being wrong.
Yes.
One of the reasons why they stopped being friends with me is because I started blowing up.
Of course.
And then they were like, oh my God. Like,
it's a mirror.
Yeah.
It's a mirror that reflects to them the version of themselves that they actually are. And that sucks. So all they're going to do is try to tear you down as much as they possibly can. Because it makes them feel better about their lack of action toward their dreams because they know that they settled. They sold out for something.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? When they see like physical evidence and representation of what could have been possible for them, especially different for people you grew up with.
Yeah.
Because you come from such a similar place.
Exactly.
You know, it's easy to look at a Matthew McConaughey or whoever and be like, oh, good for them. But they didn't, you know, I grew up different than they did.
Yeah.
Like they had it better than I did. Like it's so much easier to characterize those people as being other or better than But when you like see somebody that came from a very similar situation, that grew up in a very similar household, that had very similar values, and then they do something that's extraordinary or something that you wanted to do, then it's like oof, yeah. I guess I could have done something if I actually really wanted to do it. You know what I mean? So yeah, I mean, you along the way, it's just like you're going to lose some of those things, some of those people. But you also, I assume, have made a bunch of new relationships and new friendships with people who think similarly to you, who also probably had friends that left them because of the decision that they made.
And who are supportive and don't try to make me feel small or whatever to make them feel better, right? So it's so funny how the closest people, sometimes people who love you give you the worst advice and can be the least supportive because they are projecting how they feel about themselves onto you or how far they think they can go onto you.
Right.
The other thing I want to say is that sometimes missing these balls are such a blessing.
Hmm.
If I had gotten that job at Hot 97, you want to know how much money these radio personalities make?
Yeah, like 80K like, or something.
Not even. Some of these personalities are making like 30K a year, 40K a year.
What?
I make so much more money than that now. You know what I mean?
These are the kind of things that make it so obvious. We did a video, and it was a couple of years ago or something. It was Howard Stern talking about podcasting and like how terrible of a medium it is and how horrible and blah, blah, blah. And like understanding more about how the radio world works, it's, oh, I totally get why somebody like that would shit on podcasts. Because if you had to do 5 years of an unpaid internship to then get this shitty show that nobody listened to on a regional local radio thing, and then do that at making $27,000 a year for 7 years, and then you get a promotion to 35, and then you're finally, like Howard Stern's obviously the most exaggerated example of this, but you take an average person who's been doing it, and they've been in the industry for 30 years.
Yeah, they might make $300K like, a year if they're really,
if
really
they're
good.
Really good.
And famous.
In a really large market.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So like when you take somebody like that, who they had to sacrifice and work and do all this other shit for
years,
literally like, decades. And then they look at like somebody who started
3 years later, making 60K a month on my podcast.
More distribution, better listenership, like businesses, all these other opportunities come from it. That would be pretty frustrating. You know what I mean?
Yeah. But, and so like, I feel so lucky I didn't get the MTV show. I feel so lucky I didn't get Hot 97. I feel so lucky I got rejected from SiriusXM because now I own my brand and I have businesses and like, I didn't have my reputation tarnished. If I had gotten filmed on MTV when I was 25 years old, like I would definitely have tarnished everything, you know? So thank God those things didn't happen because I do really believe that everything happens for a reason. And I got skills along the way that didn't go away. You get these skills and then you transfer them in different areas. And without corporate, without my MBA, without the blog, without the radio station, I would not be Hala Taha.
Yeah.
I would not have gone so far so quick. So I don't regret any of it.
You can only join the dots looking back.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah. You can't ever piece it together looking into the future. So speaking of looking into the future, what do you got that's like exciting for you next?
Well, my podcast network is really blowing up. We've secured over $3 million in sponsorships in a year and a half. Like we are crushing. I'm sponsoring Podcast Movement for the first time.
Nice. I'll see you there then.
Yeah. Like as big as like the iHeart area, like really crushing it in that regard, speaking everywhere, writing a book.
Oh, cool.
So started the process of getting an agent and all these kinds of things.
Are you allowed to tell me what it's about?
Yes.
Okay.
It is. And I'm happy to come on and talk about it again. It's going to be about human behavior and social media. So platforms are always changing. Algorithms are always changing. But human behavior doesn't ever change.
There you go.
So if you understand human behavior, you'll always be like 80% of the way there. And then you got to just figure out the algorithm. So that's really what it's going to be about. I've interviewed like every major human behavior expert in the world. Robert Cialdini is like one of my mentors. He wrote Influence. He's going to write Forward and everything like this. Fingers crossed. But yeah, I'm really excited.
Good. Well, we'll definitely have you back on when that day comes. And then last question for you, Hala. How important you've already mentioned it like three times, mentors and different people you talk to. How important have the relationships in your life been in getting you to the point where you are now?
So important because sometimes you can't even see, like when I was in a dark place in terms of like my dad was dying, I literally had 20 people working for free for me that all I had to do was just turn it on and turn it into an agency. I had built all the processes. I couldn't even see it. I was blind to my own opportunities. And somebody who was a stranger, again, back to the point that sometimes the closest people to us don't even have the best interests for us or our future. They can't even see us for who we are. They see us for who we were, right? My friends couldn't see me past high school hall that got no opportunities, right? Mm-hmm. My ex-boyfriend couldn't see me past intern at Haunt 87 because he was with me for so long, mm-hmm. right? Heather saw me as who I was and who I became mm-hmm. because she met me later on in life. And she was so impressed with what I was doing. And she was the one that told me to start a business. Mm. She funded me as my first client. She's the one that was like screaming at me to quit Disney. She's, "You're nuts." I remember she was in the grocery store and she's, "You quit your job tomorrow." And you know what I mean? Because I was just like, "I'm scared." And she's, "You're retarded. Come on, just do it." You know yeah. what I mean? So it's, she pushed me several times. So it's like Heather has been a great mentor. Jordan Harbinger, he's a huge podcaster.
He's the man.
He also was like Heather, where like I really was chasing him. Mm-hmm. Heather was like my business mentor, but she didn't know a lot about podcasting. And I was yeah. like, I want to know everything about this. One thing, you got to be really obsessed with what you do. Yeah. And so I'm the type of person that like literally ask me anything about podcasting, I know the answer.
Yeah.
And I know the answer better than everybody else.
Yeah.
And I 100% confident about this. Mm-hmm. Jordan Harbinger to me was the smartest. There's only one other person I feel like knows more than me, and it's Jordan Harbinger.
Yeah.
Maybe. Now I feel like I probably know. But so at what, this was like 3 years ago. I remember he came on my podcast and I started yeah. reaching out to him. I was like, "Hey, do you need any help with anything?" He's really big into growing his show. And I was like, "Do you know about all these media buying opportunities? Have you heard of Castbox? Have you like," and I put him onto Castbox media buying, and he was mm-hmm. like, "Wow, like you're really smart." And I was like, "The subscriber acquisition cost is this." This, I would just send him random information.
Yeah, yeah.
Then I got on the cover of Podcast Magazine and I would put him as my favorite podcaster. I'm like, "Hey, Jordan, I put you in Podcast Magazine." Or,
yeah.
"I got this blog feature. I put you in it." And so I kept putting it in his ear. And I told him what I do and all this stuff. And then one day he was like, "Holly, my producer's sick. Can you write a commercial for me? Like, I need to write a new chalk points. My producer's sick. Like, really need help. I think you're really good at this stuff. Could you do it for me?" And I wasn't like, "Oh, it's going to cost $300.
Sure,
like,
right.
I was just like, "Sure." And like, I did it right away. I crushed it. And he's like, "This is amazing." Then like, he just started giving me advice. He yeah. started telling me all the game. He told me all the tricks. He really taught me a lot about yeah. podcasting. So he was like my podcast mentor. He's the reason why I was able to grow my show really big. And like, even to this day, if I'm like, "Hey, like, I'm just like confused about this," and he'll tell me exactly what it is because yep. he's got 10 more years of experience in this game than me. And so I see him as like the old school knowledge, like I'm bringing him the new school knowledge. So it's this really this mentor-mentee relationship. So he's my podcast mentor. And then I'm lucky because all my clients, I'm like in this white glove agency where I only do like big CEO, yep. big authors, celebrities.
People that can afford to pay you.
Those clients always become my mentors
yeah.
and my biggest advocates because I really work hard for them. Yeah. They get to know me. They really like me. And then they refer their friends. And they always, they're like sort of not necessarily teaching me things, but they're the type of mentor that says my name in a room
yeah.
when I'm not there.
The indirect mentors.
Opportunities, you know?
Yeah. 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 Tell people you should have like official, like direct mentors, but also unofficial indirect mentors.
Yeah.
And that totally resonate with that for sure.
Because yeah.
you get in the right rooms with the right people and you just show up and do a good job. Successful people are always wanting to help people be successful. Like truly, truly successful people with an abundance mindset, like they want to help people,
yeah.
but they're not going to do it for people who are not going to take the help and put in the work, right? You know what I'm saying?
Exactly.
Like they don't like wasting their time.
And they're not going to put your name in the hat if they know you're going to embarrass them.
Screw it up, right.
Yeah. Right. So it's like my name gets drops in hats because I crushed it for them on social yeah. media. So they know I'm going to crush it for their friend.
Right.
Right. right. So you've got to show the results too.
Absolutely. Well, this has been a lot of fun. We're definitely going to have a part two when you write your book, when it comes out.
Yeah.
So we'll save some of the questions that I had for that occasion. But before we take off here, why don't you tell everybody where to go find a little bit more about what you're working on?
Sure. So I would love it if you guys subscribe to Young and Profiting Podcast. So is a top entrepreneurship podcast, top business podcast. I've interviewed so many great people, Alex Ramosi, Grant Cardone, Damon John. Robert Cialdini, Chris Voss, lots of human behavior, lots of sales, marketing, negotiation, entrepreneurship. That's what my podcast is about. Again, it's called Young and Profiting. You can find it on all apps. If you're a big podcaster, you've got over 100,000 downloads, you want help with monetizing your show, you can go to yapmedia.io and submit to join our network. And if you're a celebrity, author, influencer, you've got a big budget and you want to become a LinkedIn influencer or an IG influencer, you can also reach out to me at yapmedia.io.
Perfect. Yapmedia.io and at Hala Taha, right, on Instagram?
At Yap. Good point. At Yap with Hala on Instagram.
At Yap with Hala.
Yeah. And okay. Then if you want to find me on LinkedIn, it's Hala Taha. But if you want to reach out to me, it's definitely Instagram. My LinkedIn is nuts. I'm one of the biggest influencers on the
So Yap with Hala.
On
at
IG.
Yap with Hala on IG.
Yeah.
Reach out. Tell her
tell me
love
you
her stuff.
It.
Yeah. Tell her how you're going to read her book when it comes out, buy her book, subscribe to her stuff. Hala, it's been a lot of fun. Thanks so much for coming on the show.
Thanks, Travis. You did a great job.
Thanks. That's it for today's episode. Thanks for spending some time with me and my friends. If you want to be better friends with me, then head over to travischappell.com/team to subscribe to my free newsletter, Your Friend Travis, where I share what's on my mind about life, building a business, raising kids, being married, and anything else I would normally share with my close circle of friends. That's travischappell.com/team. And my biggest ask of you, since I'm sharing my friends with you, is to share this episode with a friend of yours that hasn't listened to the show yet, and leave us a quick 5-star rating in Apple Podcasts and in Spotify. It would mean the world to us as it helps us make sure that this show continues to be more valuable to you. Thanks in advance, and I'll catch you on the next episode.
As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.
Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-Hour Energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5HourEnergy.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5HourEnergy.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%.